I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday Friday. Today, American history in three parts, sort of a biographical triptych, how three men of Europe influenced the United States from its founding to the nuclear age. That's in the second hour of today's show. Up front, we speak to the Anne Arundel County Executive, Steve Shue, about a growing heroin problem in Maryland and about the Chesapeake Bay. While Governor Larry Hogan proposed rules to deal with pollution from chicken farming on the Eastern Shore, he wants to roll back fees to pay for efforts to arrest the polluted stormwater, also affecting the health of the bay. We'll hear from Steve Shue on that, as well as Brian Bolin of the Maryland League of Conservation Voters. Midday Friday starts after the news from NPR. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Midday Friday. Dan Rodericks with you. Thanks again for joining us and making Midday part of your day. Earlier this week, Governor Larry Hogan announced his plans to tackle heroin abuse in Maryland. He's established both a task force and an interagency council to combat heroin addiction and overdoses. And the governor announced that his Office of Crime Control and Prevention would be receiving a $500,000 federal grant for this purpose. Heroin overdoses have risen over the past few years. In 2013, the state counted 464 deaths from heroin. In this edition of Midday Friday, we're going to be speaking with the county executive, Steve Shue, from Anne Arundel County, about how he's addressing this. We'll also talk about whether the stormwater management fee should be repealed. That's something Governor Hogan has called for. We'll be speaking with Steve Shue about that momentarily. And on the show today, Brent Bolin from the Maryland League of Conservation Voters. He's going to be joining us to talk about that issue, the stormwater fee, whether it should be repealed, and also Governor Hogan's proposed rules to limit poultry manure pollution running off into the Chesapeake Bay. So Brent will be with us in just a few moments. But we start the show with the Anne Arundel County Executive. Steve Shue, welcome to Midday. Thanks for making time for us.
Thank you for having me, Dan.
So it's just about 3 months into office. I guess I'll start with, how's it going?
Things are going well. I must say, I enjoy the job. It's fast-paced, and it's an opportunity to get some things done. After 8 years as a state delegate, where it is very difficult to accomplish anything, this is a breath of fresh air.
I wanted to jump in and ask you about heroin addiction. The governor, Larry Hogan, brought that into focus this week. You've drawn attention to this problem, a growing problem, the police tell us, and health officials tell us, of heroin addiction, but also heroin overdoses. So just what about this got your attention?
This is a very serious issue. There were over 300 heroin and other opiate overdoses in Anne Arundel County last year. That's probably up by double just 3 years ago, and we are currently experiencing a fatality a week, probably more than any other jurisdiction relative to our size in the state of Maryland. So that's what got my attention, is the shattered lives, the ruined families, the loss of so much promise here in our community that we had to act. Here in Anne Arundel County, we have declared a state of health emergency here, and have created a heroin task force to put forward a series of program enhancements, new programs, and other actions that we can take to address this crisis head on. And I am just ecstatic that the governor and the lieutenant governor see this challenge in the same way that we do here in Anne Arundel County, as the number one public health and public safety challenge we face in Maryland.
Steve Shue, what's the answer to the question, why? Did you ask your police chief about that? Have you asked health officials? Why now? Why are we seeing this spike in overdoses?
Several things have happened. It's sort of a perfect storm. Heroin has become very plentiful, and supply and demand being what they are, it has become cheap. Also, the vigorous efforts over the last several years to to stop abuse of prescription drugs has made prescription drugs far less available and far more expensive. And so people who had previously been abusing prescription drugs are now turning to the more readily available and less costly heroin. Yeah. But heroin is so addictive, so destructive. Our corrections department estimates that over 80% of those entering our jails are using heroin.
Are you doing some sort of an inventory of available treatment services in Anne Arundel County? Is it adequate? Is outreach adequate?
We have already conducted that inventory. We've assessed all of our programs, all of our treatment facilities, and we have deemed them inadequate. And going forward over the next several months, we will be expanding treatment options. We will be expanding existing programs, but we will also be starting several new programs to help people recover from addiction. We will also be working very closely with the school system to educate our young people about the dangers of these drugs. If you think about it, by the time a person is apprehended by the police for crime related to drugs, or by the time a firefighter or a paramedic has found a person in a state of overdose, it's too late. They're already caught in the clutches of addiction. We have to educate these kids at a much earlier stage and keep them away from drugs in the first place.
As you reminded us at the beginning here, you did serve in the House of Delegates for two terms?
8 years, yes.
8 years from North County. So another question for the new county executive in Anne Arundel County, looking at the impact of state budget cuts on education and other local funding assistance, how does that look from your perspective in Annapolis?
Well, let me sort of rephrase the question a little bit, because I don't agree with the premise that there have been cuts. The governor's budget is going to be larger next year than it is this year. That's an increase. That's true of the budget overall, and it's also true of the education budget. Now, when you hear talk of cuts, what people here in Annapolis are talking about is that the rate of increase is not as much as they had hoped and dreamed. And when they don't get their hopes and dreams realized, they start talking about, they characterize matters as cuts, but they're not. In the real world where the rest of us live, if you spend more money next year than you did last year, then that's an increase.
Well,
may not be as much as you'd like.
Yeah, I understand.
But
if there's a formula in place and I'm anticipating getting a raise this coming year and then I don't get a raise this coming year, I consider that a cut in my planning and either my personal household or for my school department.
Well, when I spoke a moment ago of hopes and dreams, the way the General Assembly manifests its hopes and dreams for future spending is through formulas and other mandated spending. Most of those formulas and mandated spending requirements are unrealistic. They create fantasy long-term budgets that will never come into being. And that's why every governor, from Governor Hogan to Governor O'Malley to Governor Ehrlich and on back, has probably never ever proposed a budget that equaled or exceeded the baseline budget of the Maryland General Assembly, because the Maryland General Assembly's budgets are pure fantasy, mm-hmm. fueled by nonsensical formulas that have no basis in reality.
So are you planning on going to the legislature and telling them they have to rework, for instance, the funding formula for education?
No, we support the governor's budget. We think it's high time that the state stopped deficit spending, lived within its means, and by doing so this 1 year, by having 1 year of belt tightening, the stage will be set for budget surpluses and much rosier budgets in the future, and we can get back to more normal and customary salary increases and expansions of programs. So this is one year of belt tightening to lay the groundwork for a much brighter future.
Steve Hsu, I want to ask you about something else that came through the legislature while you were a member of it. 2012, the vote to establish a stormwater remediation fees, or a mandate of these fees for Baltimore and the nine largest counties. And as you know, the governor's called for repeal of that law. I think the county council in Anne Arundel County is considering a repeal if they haven't already voted on it. But you voted in favor of it in 2012. So I just wanted to go over this a little bit with you. Why did you support it then? And why are you having second thoughts about it now?
Well, let me make it clear that I'm not having any second thoughts. In 2012, I felt, as I do now, that Maryland and its various counties need to address the failing infrastructure that we have of storm pipes and eroded creeks. It's critical that these resources be addressed because they're channeling filthy polluted water into our waterways and into the bay. And the bay is our number one asset, particularly here in Anne Arundel County, and we have to protect it. Now, it was clear in 2012 that a lot of counties were not doing their part to fix their storm pipe systems or repair all these eroded creeks. They were shirking their responsibility, and the General Assembly needed to step in and give them a kick in the pants and get them going on these projects. Now, the bill in 2012 did not require the counties to implement any particular fee or tax. It authorized the counties to do so, but didn't require it, and it allowed counties to fund the cost of those projects from existing resources. That's why I voted for the bill.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a year later, all the counties adopted their own individual responses to that legislation, and some counties, like Frederick County and Carroll County, did not impose any new fees. They just chose to meet the obligations with existing resources. Other counties, unfortunately, including Anne Arundel County, chose to adopt very large new rain taxes on their citizens, which I opposed then and oppose now. So I believed that Anne Arundel County and others should fund these programs. I think they're important, but I think they should be funded from existing resources and not necessarily from a new fee.
Okay, so the $85 a household for a single-family home fee, you just don't think should be in place. You think you can do it from the general budget, from property taxes?
I think we could do it from the general fund from a multiplicity of sources, including property taxes, but we also have income taxes, recordation and transfer taxes, hotel taxes, and a variety of others. Once a dollar goes into the general fund, it doesn't really matter where it came from.
You know, so I'm trying to understand, and I'm sure our listeners want to understand, what exactly would we be repealing if there was no, if the state legislature, if the General Assembly in 2012 didn't say, you know, Anne Arundel County, you must charge $85, then what are we repealing here? And how are things going to be any different than all those years when the counties really didn't do much?
Well, I think in one sense the 2012 legislation did serve its intended purpose of getting counties moving on these infrastructure projects. Now, at this point in retrospect, we have a patchwork quilt of fiscal responses by the various counties. Some, like Carroll and Frederick, didn't adopt any particular fees, didn't adopt fees or taxes, and others did. That has created a significant backlash in jurisdictions where these fees were imposed, and I think that the Senate president has effectively acknowledged that and is now willing to take a step back and simply require the counties to pursue these infrastructure projects, but not mandate any particular type of fiscal funding requirement.
I guess I would just ask, in closing on this subject, what's the hammer then for the counties? I mean, how does the state, the Maryland Department of Environment, the Environmental Protection Agency, get the counties to really do something other than saying, yes, we're going to do our best here. We're going to step up.
Well, the federal government has the ultimate hammer here. The ten big counties, including the city of Baltimore, operate under federal permits to discharge water into the waterways. If those permits are denied by the federal government, we will be in very serious trouble. The federal government also has the power to order us to stop issuing permits to new businesses, to residences, to those that want to expand the existing infrastructure. So the feds have more than adequate hammer to make the jurisdictions meet their responsibilities.
Steve Hsu, thank you for your time. I just wanted to ask you, is there a particular project, a particular initiative you want to get started this year that you're hoping to see roll out in the next few months?
We're pushing ahead full steam with our effort to reduce taxes and fees here in Anne Arundel County, starting with a reduction in property tax. We're also working really hard to improve public safety, especially by focusing on this heroin crisis, and working very closely with our school board to develop a new plan, a new vision for school construction to accelerate construction of smaller neighborhood high schools rather than large mega schools. Those are our three main efforts right now.
Well, thanks for checking in with us today, 3 months into office. Good luck, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Dan. Have a great day.
You too. Anne Arundel County Executive Steve Hsu. When we come back, Brent Bolin from the League of Conservation Voters joins Midday Friday to share why his group supports the stormwater management fee that the county executive just says he wants to see go away. Plus, Governor Hogan's proposal to combat pollution from poultry manure. Does his plan go far enough to fight pollution from farms going into the Chesapeake Bay? You're welcome to give us a call during this open phone lines hour of Midday Friday. A short break. We'll be right back. Okay, welcome back to Midday Friday. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us, everybody. So you just heard Anne Arundel County Executive Steve Hsu on a couple of things there, the heroin problem in Maryland. But I wanted to focus in on, for this segment of the show, what he had to say about the stormwater fee, which has been ridiculed as the rain tax in Maryland. It's active in Baltimore City and the nine largest counties under a state law from 2012. And I want to go over, spend a little time today on Midday going over this. Brent Bolin from the League of Conservation Voters, the Maryland League of Conservation Voters, is with us here today. Now, Brent, nice to have you, first of all.
Thank you.
So you support, your group supports keeping everything in place, this not repealing it, as Governor Hogan has called for, and as the county executives in, Harford County, at least there, have called for, and the county council in Anne Arundel County has called for repealing it. So let's just go over this, all right?
Sure.
In 2012, what exactly did the General Assembly call for in that law?
Well, it's an interesting thing that the environmental community had been working on this for years. Polluted runoff is a huge problem. It's the only major source of bay pollution that's still increasing. As Maryland's population grows and, you know, development happens, a lot of it sprawl development, impervious surface grows, and those hard surfaces are what generate polluted runoff. So this was, if we were ever going to achieve our bay goals, we needed to deal with this source of pollution. And so the law, you know, you go through the process of legislative sausage making and you end up with a law that applies to the 10 most developed counties. And the logic there is, or nine in Baltimore City.
Right.
And the logic there is that those 10 jurisdictions have Clean Water Act permits that are federal permits for their discharges from their stormwater management system. So they have the most people, the most impervious surface, the most stormwater discharge, and these permits. And those permits have a hammer in them for retrofitting those impervious surfaces. So tying the fee program to the permits made a lot of sense because these were the jurisdictions that had to show they're addressing the problem. Here's a tool to help you do it.
But for many years, those nine counties in Baltimore City, I guess I'm making a generality here, but they basically didn't do very much.
That's correct. And there's been a law on the books in Maryland for many years that you could enact a system of charges to fund stormwater retrofits. And as of 2012, when this law passed, only Montgomery County had enacted a program and only kind of half of one. So clearly having the authority wasn't enough. There had to be some kind of a hammer.
When you say retrofits, you mean fixing your system so not as much filthy runoff goes into the creeks and out into the bay, right?
That's right. And I think what a lot of people don't realize is when you see a road or a parking lot with a storm drain, that water goes down into a pipe that runs directly out to a creek. So whatever's in that parking lot, oil from an engine block, trash, you name it, that washes down that pipe out to the creek into the bay.
Now, you just heard my interview with Steve Hsu, the new Anne Arundel County executive, and I got a little confused there because he's saying, and others are saying, the law passed, the counties weren't mandated to set a fee. We can either do it or not do it. We don't have to set a fee. We can take money out of our general fund. We don't have to charge people $85 per household. or in Harford County, $12.50 per household.
Right.
We don't have to do that. So we want to get away from this mandated fee. They make it sound like it was a mandated. Was it a mandated fee or not?
Yes. Read the text of the law. It says there are two requirements. One, you shall adopt a fee. And two, you shall put it into a dedicated fund for addressing the source of pollution, period.
So it didn't just give the counties authority to set a fee if they felt like it.
No, it said do it.
Okay, it said do it. And so far, we've had, you know, all this pushback, and it's been ridiculed as the rain tax. I keep saying that because I refer to it as stormwater remediation or stormwater management fee.
Sure.
But the clever people who don't like taxes and don't like fees came up with that phrase, and people see it as a rain tax. And we've got a poll from Goucher saying, you know, I don't know how many, it's the majority of Marylanders want to see it rolled back. And I wonder how many people actually know what they're being charged and when they're being charged, how they're being charged, and what the money's being used for. So
right.
Your group opposes repealing this law, and so here's your opportunity to tell us why.
Well, here's the thing, is that negative moniker has been very effective, and a lot of people believe that that's actually what's happening, and that is not what's happening. We work with a group called Interfaith Partners for the Chesapeake, and they came up with a phrase that I think encapsulates it the best. God makes the rain, but we make the runoff, right? We're the ones that put the parking lots in there. And so dealing with the runoff that comes off those parking lots is our responsibility, and this is a funding tool that helps these jurisdictions do what they need to do. If I'm a county executive, I want more tools in my toolbox, not less, and I want to have this dedicated fee and dedicated fund, because otherwise, when you're trying to pay for these things, you're saying, well, what cops am I not going to fund? What schools am I not going to build? And a jurisdiction like Anne Arundel, which is maxed out on its debt that it can bond against, so if it's going to do $75 million of stormwater projects, what $75 million of other stuff is not going to get done?
Well,
and that's the whole point.
That was my question toward the end there, but we ran out of time. Steve Hsu is committed to reducing taxes in Anne Arundel County, property tax. How do you do that and also do this? I guess I should have gone back and asked him that.
Well, I think that that's exactly the issue, is that, you know, you can't squeeze blood from a stone. And the idea here is that this is funding that's needed, and it's actually tied to the source of the pollution. So, you know, highway taxes pay for roads maintenance. You know, these fees are user fees. They say you drive on roads, you park on parking lots, you're part of the problem. Be part of the solution.
Brent, is part of the problem with this law that it didn't just set a fee that every county should charge, you know, $5 a household, $15 a household. Instead, they let the counties decide, the county councils, the county executives decide how much they were going to charge businesses and households.
Right. And I think that that has been used as a negative aspect of this law. But the funny thing about this is, if the law had mandated what the counties had to do, then the counties would be saying, you've taken away our local authority to decide what we want to do.
Right.
So we feel like we kind of can't win on that point. And, you know, the 10 jurisdictions that have these permits all have a lot of impervious surface and have a lot of polluted runoff to deal with. But I think anybody can understand that Howard County and Baltimore City are different. And shouldn't their programs look differently?
Mm-hmm.
I live in Prince George's County. My property taxes are different than someone that lives in Howard County. We live in different jurisdictions. And so a lot of this is sound and fury signifying nothing in my mind.
We'd like to hear from our listeners on this. Do you oppose paying this fee for stormwater runoff? Tell us why. 410-662-8780. Nobody likes taxes. Nobody likes fees. But do you see the value in this, or do you not? Do you think this is overblown? Are you listening to your county executive or your mayor on this? What do you think about it? 410-662-8780. I'm trying to get to why people are opposed to what's fairly modest fees. I guess businesses complain that the fees aren't modest. But Republican county executives, they run for office on austerity themes and, you know, rolling back taxes.
Right. Well, I think the real challenge here is running on an austerity theme is that there is a federal mandate on the state to clean up the Chesapeake, period. And that trickles down to the counties. And the midpoint of that comes in 2017. So that's coming home in the terms of all of these people that just got elected on this platform. And so that's a real thing that's going to get handed to them. And so the longer you kick the can down the road, the less time you're going to have to meet the ultimate deadline to have the cleanup done, which is 2025. And if you're talking about an infrastructure project, which is what these are, the cheapest time to make that investment is always now. So the longer you wait, the more inflation goes up and the more work you have to do in a shorter amount of time.
Brent Bolin with us. He's specializes in clean water efforts for the Maryland League of Conservation Voters. 410-662-8780 is the way to reach us if you want to get in a comment right now or a question about the stormwater fee where you live. It's Baltimore City and the 9 largest jurisdictions. Beyond that, you're not affected by this law. 410-662-8780. Our midday email address is midday@wypr.org if you want to send off an email right away. Tell us why you're opposed to paying this fee, or do you have confidence that your county can just come up with programs to remediate stormwater runoff out of their general funds and the fee is not necessary? If you are informed on that and that's what informs you, please say so. 410-662-8780. Quickly, Brent, what did the state Senate President Mike Miller propose with regard to the rainwater fee, stormwater fee?
Right. So he just came out with a bill that proposes some pretty significant changes to the program. It would do away with the mandate. It would mandate caps on what can be charged to nonprofits. It would exempt certain things like volunteer fire associations, which jeopardizes our ability to charge the feds the fee. It's a considerable amount of changes to the program.
I don't understand what you said. It jeopardizes our chance to charge the feds the fee.
Right. So here's the thing is that Senator Cardin, a couple years ago, went out of his way to pass an amendment to the Clean Water Act that said if local governments pay this fee, then the federal government has to pay it, right? Normally the government's exempt from a tax, but because this is—
You mean like out at Social Security, big parking lot or something?
Right.
Is that what you mean?
Exactly. So what the senator said was this was a difficulty in D.C. where they've had one of these fees for a number of years, and they saw it coming down the pike in Maryland and said, we have a lot of federal property too. We need to deal with it. So if the state and local governments pay the fee for their property, they can turn around and charge the feds. And I'm going to say that in Maryland, that's a good deal. 9% of Prince George's County is owned by the feds. That's a lot. So I think that we want to make sure that we have that ability to get the people that are generating this polluted runoff to pay, including the feds.
Okay. Well, what do you think about what Mike Miller is proposing? The tweaking of this? Well, removing the mandate is more than tweaking, I guess.
Yeah, it sure is. And yeah, we think that the mandate was really key to getting the counties moving forward. As we said, they've had this authority on the books for years and weren't taking advantage of it. So it's essentially going back to pre this law passing. So it's not an amendment. It's taking us back to where we were before when these things weren't really happening. Because if you're having your general fund budgets changing from year to year and you have to compete with cops and firefighters and taxes, you're in trouble.
410-662-8780 is our phone number here. Let's go to Bill in Baltimore. Bill, we'll take your call first. You're on with Brent Bolin from the League of Conservation Voters here in Maryland.
Hi, Dan. Thanks. Yeah. What I wanted to point out was two things primarily. First, I grew up in Anne Arundel County, and there, growing up, we heard constantly about, conservation of the bay and everything growing up. And, my understanding was there was a voluntary agreement put in place between the EPA and the states and to clean up the bay by 2010. That did not occur, and so this is the fallout from that. The new permits are requiring all the TMDLs to be implemented, and that needs to be funded. The second point, I'm actually, and a little bit of a disclaimer here, I'm actually involved in a lot of the cleanup, one of the practitioners designing some of the retrofits that are going into place to clean up the stormwater. And the movement that we're seeing over the past couple of years in terms of the ramp up of these projects and really implementing a lot of these controls is enormous. So if anybody's out there thinking that this is just a tax and nothing's coming out of this, it is really rolling. And the difference between now with the fees in place and the funding there to what we saw years ago when it wasn't a dedicated source, it's night and day.
Thank you for your comments. I meant to ask you about the flush tax. right? We had the flesh tax in Maryland under the Ehrlich administration some years ago.
Right.
Well, what is that? I mean, that's a fee for to help us upgrade all the wastewater treatment plants.
Right, and that is perhaps the signature success of the Chesapeake Bay cleanup. We are almost done upgrading all of the major wastewater treatment plants in this state because we've had that dedicated source of funding to pump into that resource.
How is that assessed?
Everybody,
I pay for it. You pay for it.
Yeah, everybody pays for that. That's a charge on your bill. So.
Okay, let's take another call. David in Baltimore, you're on Midday. Hi.
Hey, so, you know, coming from the premise
okay,
the
David,
question,
David, excuse me. Would you put David on hold? I want to talk to David off the air. David, would you hold on until the till 1 o'clock? I need to speak with you. Harry in Severna Park, we'll take your call instead. Hi, Harry.
Hi, Dan. Glad to hear you.
Glad to hear you, Harry.
I was almost afraid to call because at first you were asking for people that were opposed to this thing. I don't find this thing particularly onerous. I mean, I grew up along the Severn and the Magothy 45, 50 years ago, and I can't believe what's happened to it. But
What did you want to say? You support paying the fee?
And I don't find it particularly onerous. Basically, if I was a customer with Starbucks, I'd have to give up one latte a month to pay my stormwater fee, basically. And I know it's going to go up next year, so maybe I won't get a biscotti. But you can't fish there these days. I mean, the water quality has just deteriorated to the point where I'm afraid to even let my kids walk along the beach sometimes. There's so much runoff and muck and God knows what else besides the chemicals. And I mean, water is the vector that contributes to it all. So, I mean, it's almost like Obamacare. Well, accept it as a rain tax and say, hey, it's the rainwater. We got to do something about the rainwater, storms, rain. What's the...
All right, Harry, thanks. Thank you, Harry. You know, he said he doesn't mind paying it. In Anne Arundel County, it was set at $85 per household. How long would that be in place, by the way? Do we even know, like, if is there an end here, an end game for the stormwater fees?
Well, I think that's right. I think someday we're going to be done retrofitting all these old facilities. The question is, you know, how long is that going to take? And the more aggressive you are about it up front, the faster you can get it done. So that is a big issue there for sure. You know, and I think that the other thing to understand is that, you know, the counties are using this money to put people to work. Like one of the callers said, in Prince George's County, they bonded out their fee money and let a $100 million public-private partnership contract that has a 35% local and minority hiring requirement. So businesses are picking up and relocating to the county because they see this steady stream of investment there to do capital projects for the next 10 years. And this is early on in the cleanup. And I think this is one of those things where the more we do this, it's going to get cheaper and we're going to understand how to do it better. You know, we haven't exactly figured out how to build a better mousetrap on this, but we're going to over the course of doing this work. So how long and how much it's going to cost, I think, is going to change as we do it.
James, calling from Anne Arundel County. Go right ahead. You're on Midday, James.
Hey, good afternoon, Dan. How are you doing?
Okay.
Yeah, just like to echo the previous caller's sentiments that, you know, I live in Harford County. I work in Anne Arundel, and I see, you know, the effects of stormwater runoff every day. And, you know, I think a lot of where the pushback is coming is from lack of education as to how this is developed and what the effect is on the environment. And I think it's a lot more effort was put into, you know, informing people of the process of how this came about. It may help a little bit.
Okay. Thank you very much. Brent, while you're here, I wanted to ask you also about the phosphorus management tool rules that came out. Governor Hogan said he was going to put his own in place. He before he took office, he told farmers that he wasn't going to let these rules decimate their businesses. This had to do, obviously, with the pollution from runoff off farms that are using chicken manure for fertilizer. We've talked a lot about this on the air here. And my simple question to you was the Hogan rules versus the O'Malley rules that were in place and the proposed Hogan rules, is there much difference between the two?
There's significant differences. I think the thing people need to understand about the phosphorus management regulations that Governor O'Malley published is that they were the result of a multi-year stakeholder process that involved everybody, farmers, the environmental community, everybody you can think of was in that process. When those regs were pulled back, and then a month later, Governor Hogan comes out with these new regs, that's a result of a much shorter process that the environmental community has not been a part of. So there was a long public vetting process that happened on the previous set of regulations, and this one was churned out in a month without that same kind of input.
Okay, but can you tell whether there's a big difference? Because the other day, when I just looking at press reports on it,
sure.
I haven't had the advantage you have of actually reading them yet, but it looked to me like the one plan implemented the rules over 6 years and the other one over 7 years. I didn't see a big difference off my first reading of press reports about it.
Right, and that, I think in this case, the devil is in the details. It does give a whole another year delay to starting to do this, which is just one more year of pollution that's happening. But then when you dig into the details of the regulations, and I'm not super technically versed in all this, but the financial assurances that go into this plan have a number of off-ramps. And so our concern is that there's no actual guarantee that this program is going to stick and have an endpoint, whereas the O'Malley regulation said, here's the amount of time. It's going to take 6 years. But at the end of the 6 years, you knew everybody was going to be on this plan. And we don't have the same assurances in what that phosphorus management rules from Governor Hogan look like.
Back to the subject of the stormwater fee. Brenda in Baltimore, welcome to the show. Go right ahead. Hi.
Yeah, thank you. I'm for the bay restoration, but I'm against the onerous tax of the additional $15. I started with the bay restoration at $7.50. And last year it went up to 15, and then the restoration came in. Stormwater tax came in. If the state had already in place, they already had the law, and they were supposed to foot the bill to put this in place so that it wouldn't get a hammer. So now that the hammer's come, why isn't it turned back on them for them to do it instead of imposing an additional amount on me as a resident of Baltimore City and a homeowner? Harford County's paying $12.50. I'm paying 15.
Right. We were talking about that earlier, how each county set their own fee. Frederick County set it at $1.
1 cent, actually.
Oh, 1 cent. Property. I forgot. Yeah, 1 cent. In Carroll County, what did they do? Did they set any fee?
They actually set nothing. And then what happened was that they actually got a little bit let off the hook, saying that they could sort of, if they committed to doing this through funding the dedicated fund through a certain means of their general fund, mm-hmm. that then they could get out of assessing the fee. So basically it was decided not to have the political fight on that a year ago, which I think has given us problems to this day.
So Brenda's pointing out this difference between Baltimore City and,
right.
and Harford County. I'm not sure I understood what she said about the state's part in this.
Well, again, I think if you go to most of Harford County and you go to Baltimore City, you're going to see vastly different amounts of pavement in Baltimore City than you are in Harford County. It's just much denser in Baltimore City. It's much more paved. There's parts of the city with hardly any greenery mm-hmm. and hardly any open ground that can soak it up. It's a very old city. And so there is a bigger problem coming out of Baltimore City. There's no doubt about that.
Dale in Stevensville will take your comments, too. Hi, Dale.
Yeah, hi. I'm opposed to any tax on anything existing. If they want to tax new impermeable surfaces, I don't have a problem with that. But when you open a business, build a house, whatever, you expect a certain amount of expenses. Otherwise, you wouldn't go ahead with the project. When they come along retroactively and they add a new fee that you may not have budgeted for. Now, if you're Walmart, maybe it doesn't make a difference. If you're a small business that happens to have a reasonable amount of parking, it can be a big difference. Even a homeowner, last year they passed a mandatory recycling law that only applied to condos and apartments, not to townhouses and houses. Well, in Baltimore City, that's probably no problem. You get out of a rural area where I manage an apartment complex or a condo complex, that little fee adds 1.5% to the condo fees because there's only 10 affected properties in the entire county.
Dale, hold on a minute. Are you in Kent County?
No, I live in Queen Anne County, but I manage a condo property in Caroline County.
Okay. As far as stormwater fee goes, are
neither
either
one of those
counties included in it?
No.
But the idea, how are you going to address this problem if you exclude existing properties? That is the
right.
problem, isn't it? Existing
yes.
properties with roofs and paved parking lots and pesticides on lawns and all that stuff?
Well, that's exactly it. For a couple hundred years, we didn't know what a big problem we were causing by paving everything. And now that we know, we actually have regulations going forward so that new construction accounts for this polluted runoff. So it's all the old stuff that has to be taken care of. Otherwise, nothing will ever get better. That stuff will continue to pollute.
Thanks for being here today, Brent.
Thank you.
Brent Boland from the Maryland League of Conservation Voters. This is Midday Friday. We're going to move on to the last segment of this first hour of Midday. I have some listener mail to catch up on and a couple of comments to read to you from earlier shows, following up on earlier shows. Short break on Midday. We'll be right back. Coming up in the second hour of Midday, a history triptych, the stories of three European men and how they influenced the United States from its founding to the nuclear age. The Marquis de Lafayette, French hero of the American Revolution, the Italian philosopher Cesare Beccaria, who influenced early American law, and the German-born scientist Albert Einstein, who had a lot to say about war and peace, American society, and civil rights. More Midday after the news at 1. Welcome back to Midday Friday. Dan Rodriguez here. I want to spend a few minutes catching up on a couple of things from earlier shows, and I have some listener emails I'll try to get to here in the closing minutes of this first hour. The other day, during a discussion with WYPR senior news analyst Fraser Smith, a listener called about the city of Baltimore coming up several million dollars short in funds from the state for the public schools here. The funding formula looks at assessments of property in the city each year and the taxable base of the city. And it's been asserted, with some foundation in my opinion, that had Baltimore city officials not been so generous to developers with tax breaks, the city would have sufficient revenue and not look, on paper, wealthier than it actually is. The city provides breaks in various forms. One is a pilot, payments in lieu of taxes, PILOT. This goes back a couple of decades. The Maryland General Assembly granted Baltimore full authority to negotiate some of these deals, and some of these deals would relieve developers of hotels and office buildings, stores and housing, of up to 95% of their property taxes for up to 25 years. And one example of that is over in Harbor East. East Baltimore is the Marriott waterfront in Harbor East. John Patarakis developed. It's valued at $155 million. That hotel costs city schools more than $1.4 million in state aid for next year through the funding formula. Under that deal, the city inked in 2000, or updated a deal in 2000. The hotel pays just $1 a year in lieu of property taxes for 25 years. So that's how a pilot works. Now, another form of break is called a TIF, tax incremental financing, and that's what the Midday listener asked about the other day when Fraser was with me in the studio, and I took some time to go back and go over what a TIF is, tax increment financing, before I answered on the air. It's a public subsidy that allows developers to pay for public infrastructure for a new development, including that's like water and sewer lines, roads, sidewalks, lighting, and it's paid for with bonds sold by the city or the state to private investors. Repayment of those bonds takes up to 30 years and is done with property taxes that are diverted from the annual upgraded assessments of the new development. Those property taxes are used to repay the bonds instead of being paid into the city's treasury. Developers have argued that this is not a tax break, but rather a cost of redevelopment for the cash-strapped city. Developers use that argument all the time, but for. It's called the but-for argument. But for the TIF, this development wouldn't happen. That's how they argue it, to gain a TIF approval from elected officials, the mayor, the city council, board of estimates, economic development officials, whoever it is. That means, as I say, we've heard this before, the but-for, the TIF, such a development would not take place because they say the cost of the infrastructure would be too high. In areas like Baltimore County and surrounding metro areas where TIF financing is not used, developers bear the cost of most infrastructure. There was one TIF in Baltimore County at the Metro Center in Owings Mills where TIF bonds were used to help build a parking garage. The city has several TIFs granted in districts that include Harbor Point, the EBDI project over near Johns Hopkins, Mondawmin and Mall, another one. Now, on another point, when Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake was here a couple of weeks ago, she was quick to state that tax breaks given to developers, particularly along Baltimore's valuable waterfront were not a factor in the loss of school funds through that state formula I mentioned. She made a point that the city's property is assessed in steps, in sections, over a three-year period, and that the most recent assessment did not include the waterfront areas of the city. So I found this confusing, and I'm assuming Midday listeners did too. Kevin Harris, the mayor's chief of public affairs, said this in an email, that what the mayor was referencing was the fact that the increase in the assessments are driven by the property group that was just assessed. The change in the city's value is only driven by the current year's group, which accounts for the one-third the mayor was referencing. There was no intention to lie or mislead the public. But it was confusing, and it was inaccurate. In fact, while one-third of the city is reassessed in any given year, the total assessable base, which goes into that state funding formula, includes the whole city. As the Sun's Luke Broadwater reported, with development booming in Baltimore, the city's property wealth grew by more than $1.3 billion last year, by far the fastest rate in Maryland. But those gains have come with a cost: deep cuts in state aid to city schools. The proposed state budget for next year cuts aid to Baltimore public education by $35 million, in part due to this funding formula that I mentioned, that now assumes that the city is rich enough to pay more toward its schools. So with the tax breaks, the city is not as wealthy as it looks on paper. Okay, I hope I didn't confuse you further. I hope that helped a little bit, but I didn't want to try to answer the other day on the air off the top of my head when Fraser was here. I wanted to get some more information, especially about the TIFs. Thank you to new Midday producer Melody Simmons for helping with that answer. Just a couple of emails here at the end of the show, following up on our conversation about the middle class the other day and income inequality. Mayek wrote in to say, why is greed never talked about during these discussions on income inequality? Why does the Nobel Prize never go to the study of greed? Greed is a major factor in income inequality. You ought to talk about it. He's got a point there. Larry wrote in from Bel Air to say this about the middle class losing ground. He says, I have a good retirement situation in place. I went to college on the GI Bill, the federal GI Bill, obtained a good job in sales, retired full-time at 66. I'm working 2 days a week to keep busy. My wife was a teacher, so we have her pension, our Social Security benefits, and my 401k. I was able to fund my 401k since I had a good income over 35 years. But I'm worried about my son. He's a technician, not a college grad. His wife is a part-time nurse. They have very poor benefits, and a 2-year-old and a 6-year-old with massive childcare costs. There is no extra money to set aside for his 401k and no employer match. I don't see him doing as well as my wife and I have done. I plan to leave them some money from my estate to help them. We had some other emails here. Let me see if I can get a couple of these. Oh, on immigration, our discussion about President Obama's plan to defer deportation of some immigrants who are in the country undocumented. Bob's wrote in from Timonium to say, people who oppose immigration are ignoring the lessons of history. The American experience with immigration is overwhelmingly favorable and is part of the reason why our country enjoys the greatness that it does. There were major backlashes in the past against the Irish, the Jews, Italians, and the Polish. All of these groups have assimilated themselves into society and have made huge contributions to the American experience. Times change, people change, and laws change in order to keep up with what is best for our country. Unfortunately, some people prefer to live in the past. And let's see. Oh, program open space. Yep, this came up, a discussion about the program open space fund in Maryland to fund state purchases of open land, put farmland into preservation. Ajax wrote in to say, we've been fighting for years to protect the integrity of program open space. Unfortunately, it is viewed by all sorts of schemes as a great dipping pail in the state budget by governors Democrat and Republican. For years, land acquisition was funded by the transfer tax. As more and more money is siphoned off, it is now resorting to the bonding authority for the state. And now Larry Hogan, the new governor, wants to skim off even more. It is downright depressing. If you have comments to share with us about anything you hear on our midday show, please write to us. Simple email address, midday@wypr.org, and we save emails and try to read them on Fridays. Speaking of Friday, it's lunchtime on Friday. Lunch on Friday is provided by Joe Squared Pizza. Joe Squared Pizza is located at 133 West North Avenue in the Station North neighborhood at the Inner Harbor at Power Plant Live, and you can find them on the web at joesquared.com. We thank them very much for providing lunch for our guests and our staff. A short break. We'll get the news from NPR, and then the second hour of Midday.